Okay, thank you very much for the invitation to speak at this very nice conference. I will talk about the fatty filterio cosmological large scale structure. But let me just briefly put into context. Let's ask what happens to cosmology, fundamental physics cosmology, after the famous data release of the Planck satellite. The Planck satellite improved the limits that we already got from WMAP by a factor of 3. Now, the modern way to think about inflation is as being the theory of a Gaussian boson characterized by higher dimension operator. For example, pi is the Gaussian boson, a dimension 6 operator like this. Absence of any detection that made any news about non-Gaussianities or remarkable detection from Planck implies that we didn't observe any of this operator. And this means that since the non-Gaussianities or any signal from this effetti Lagrangian scales like a dimension 6 operator, which is Hubble at the scale of inflation over the cutoff of the theory, absence of detection means that the scale that suppress the new physics in inflation is higher than what we knew already from WMAP by factor squared of 3. Now, given that we didn't have any threshold, theoretical threshold, for knowing what this energy scale meant, absence of detection in Planck doesn't lead us there. Nothing interesting. An unknown energy scale is square root of 3, is the same physical scale. So Planck was a great experiment, but Planck is not good enough. And this is not Planck people's fault, it's nature's fault. That is, so you should complain with nature. I strongly advise that. That is, the CMB didn't have enough information about inflation for us to learn to cross the intrinsic detection. So Planck was an opportunity for a detection, but not much an opportunity to change the theory in absence of detection. And on the theory side, the little changes, you can look at the papers coming out of inflation. And this is very contrary to what happens for LHC, which was designed to cross a theoretical threshold. We were guaranteed to get something like a Higgs by unitarity. And now we don't see anything, so we question it naturally. So any discovery or non-discovery is changing the theory. Instead, Planck is not an experiment like that. So in order to increase our knowledge about inflation, we need more modes. Since what we probe about inflation is a statistical distribution of fluctuations, we need more sample distributions, more modes. Large scale structure surveys, which are map of the distribution of galaxies in the universe, are roughly speaking the same information as the CMB, just time evolved. So they contain, in principle, the same information as in the CMB about inflation, as just time evolved, and so a little bit made dirty by the cosmological evolution. So I will show here results that, if verified and everything is fine and extended to all observables, can increase the limits of non-Gaussianities to a FNL of order 1, which is a factor of 100 better 70 than what we have with Planck now. And this is the threshold. I can argue offline that the absence of detection at this scale, it means that we can consider that this would be an observational proof of standard order inflation. So this is a theoretical threshold that we would like to cross. And I think these results, preliminary results, seem to show that. This will be learning without a detection. And of course, this offers also a way to study the large scale structures of the universe, which is very nice. It's a nice astrophysics setup. And also, of course, has implication for for neutrinos masses, extra light species, dark energy, whatever you want. So Planck, with the polarization release in a few months, will increase the constraint by a factor of about 2, which, given the preface I made, it doesn't change anything if there is no detection. So NACS are big, large structure experiments. These are already funded. In 7, 10 years, 9 years, 8 years, this is Euclid European, this is LSST, big major project for US. They will map very well the distribution of galaxies. And this is, for us, is like passing from electronic collider to an hadronic collider. It is much more powerful, but much more dirty. In fact, it's still an open question how many modes are available for modern information from this large scale structure. So in order to address these questions, I started and developed this approach, which is called the fatty filter of cosmological large structure, which is quite recent, and not many results has been made available so far. Now, what is the fatty filter of cosmological large structure? Let's look at the universe. And the idea would be you can see that this is the distribution of matter. This is the two-point function, delta rho square, rho over rho square, the distribution of dark matter. Let's imagine we're looking at dark matter for this talk. And you can see that as a function of distance, as you go to smaller distances in inverse megaparsec, the perturbation is very small, and then as you go higher in energy, in length scale, short length scale, higher momenta, they become over the one around this scale. So it's very tempting to have a perturbative approach here, where the perturbations are small, and which should tend to converge as much as in the ultraviolet as possible. So this scale, in fact, is the scale where you can see that the universe is quite homogeneous, but on very short scale, you hit the galaxies where the universe is very, very inhomogeneous. Now, there has been, in the past 20 years, a standard approach, which is called standard approach, which I think is not well-defined. What people did was to approximate the universe on large scale structure as a pressureless perfect fluid. And they took their equation of motion, for example, this is the continuity equation for a fluid that results in a momentum equation. And since on the long distances perturbations are small, one Taylor expands this equation, solve iteratively in delta rho over rho, which I call delta. For example, at nth order, the solution would be some Green's function on top of the applied convolved with the lower order solutions. And then one, for example, computes a second order correction by squaring these correlation functions. And since there are sources of many different modes, there are convolution integrals, which can be represented as Feynman diagrams. So maybe many of you know, but Feynman diagrams have nothing to do with really quantum mechanics. They have just to do with solving some stochastic classical equation. So now, this approach is ill-defined because when we integrate in the loop, of course, we're going to all the way to the ultraviolet. And in the ultraviolet delta, which scales, you could see before that it grows in the ultraviolet. So at some point, it becomes much bigger than 1. And these equations were an expansion in delta less than 1, so clearly it doesn't make any sense. And of course, on very short distance, the galaxy is not a perfect fluid, or dark matter is not a perfect fluid. So the equation really don't make sense. So the idea here is to develop a well-defined and manifestly convergent perturbation theory to describe the cluster of dark matter large scale. And let me just have a very simple analogy, which is consider a dielectric material. The dielectric material is very complicated on the atomic scale, but on distances much larger than the atomic scale, it's enough to describe atoms with their gross characteristics, for example, the polarizability, which is the response of the induced dipole to the electric field, alpha, it's on average. And by studying this equation, we don't study, when you study the electric, the equations for all the atoms, but we study the electrodynamic Maxwell equation in a smooth material in the dielectric system, so which are called the Maxwell equation, the system. And so this is, for example, the electric. But if you think about that, the universe is really like a dielectric fluid. That is, each dipole is a galaxy, and this galaxy moves. So it's more like a dielectric fluid. So this is the basic idea of the effective theory, which, as I will show, will lead us to a manifestly convergent perturbation theory, which is valid only at long distances, where all perturbations are small and all corrections are small. The bottom line result, I want to show the bottom line result immediately, is the following. This is the ratio. I will show many of these plots, with highlighting every time something different. This is the ratio of the prediction of the two-point function, the power spectrum, of the effective field theory over the power spectrum of the full theory, the nonlinear scale. Because these were simulating, trying to compute the perturbations for dark matter. There is a way to solve the problem, which is running big, computer expensive n-body simulations. These are very expensive and doesn't make a lot of sense for simulating the linear theory, but they've done it, so we can compare against those. So one would be match exactly the result of the numerical simulation, n-body simulations, and this is the prediction of the effective theory, and this was the state of the art before the effective theory came up. And you see that the improvement with the numerical simulation agreement increase up by a factor of roughly 6 with respect to former techniques, which were ill-defined. And since the number of modes, the power for to test inflation goes like a max cube, this is a factor of 200 more modes available to the survey. So this means that if this is true, it's making the survey 200 times more powerful than what we thought before. Yes. No, sorry. One is the n-body simulation results. Two is the error that they can assign. This, so I should stress that this is a percent plot. This is not I mean, this is astrophysical subject, but this is not a log-log plot. This is a percent plot, and the experiments are doing that. Okay, they were going to measure these things to percent level, so we better get this precision. Yeah, so one is the result of embodied simulation, so normalizes to that. Two is their systematic error that they estimate to be 2%, 1%, 2%. The blue line is the prediction of the effective field theory that I will explain. This line here is the prediction of the former theories, which does disagree very early. And the gray band is the next order correction that we don't compute, so it's our estimated theoretical error. So you see that this theory fails when it should, because I'm not including the higher order corrections. And I'm going to explain in detail this, but I want to say, give a message that this is a, in principle, is making all the experiment 200 times more. It's like increasing the luminosity of LHC by 200. Okay, now I'm going to explain that, okay, in detail. Thanks. So let's construct this effective field theory. Is okay? Okay, thanks. Let's construct this effective theory. So let's consider the matter particle that move point-like particle that moves under gravity. Each particle is labeled by Q1, Qn. They will have a position that evolves according to the force of gravity, phi is the Newtonian potential, with a Hubble friction. H is Hubble, and there is a Hubble friction. This Dermatter particle will cluster, so there is an overdensity, which is due to how many particles labeled by Q ended up at position X. So you get an overdensity at position X, counting how many particles at position X. They move under gravity, and the gravity force is nothing but the Poisson equation. Here we have very short distances when we take the Newtonian approximation. Laplacian of phi equal delta. So remember, this is a high school Newton equation. But these equations are not okay, because clearly in the universe we cannot describe perturbatively distances smaller than the 10 megaparsecs, the galactic scale, cluster scale, I mean something like that. So we don't have any right to treat this particle as point-like particle. We have to consider them as extended objects of their size being of order 10 megaparsec. So this means that the equation on motion, they don't move like a point-like particle, but which move under the force of gravity on the center of mass. But they have also some quadruple that distorts a bit their motion, and so on and so forth. So you take each region, and under time evolution will evolve, and each one moves due to associated to the quadrupole. But also this region can also overlap, in fact, cluster merge. And so the force just computed with the dipole is not correct. There is the quadrupole, the multiple expansion, because that describes very well the effect of an external source on a particle, on extended object. But when the external object overlaps with you, you have to put a correction like that. Now, this is the question, the question that gives how the particle moves, extended object moves under gravity. And this particle will end up in some place, so they will have an extension to a perturbation to the number density. But also, their quadrupole, the tidal tensor, will group together. And so at each location, there will be an overall tidal tensor, which is the sum of the tidal tensors of all the particles that end up at one point. This object is what sources gravity. But what sources gravity is not just the number density with their mass, but also how much distorted they are, the intrinsic gravitational energy. So there is the quadrupole energy, the octuple energy, and so on and so forth. In fact, you might remember that an electric particle in a magnetic field, there is the energy, which is Q times d, but also there is the dipole energy, which is d dot e. So these terms are the analogous, gravitational analogous of d dot e. In fact, this equation, just to check it, you can derive it by taking those equations for the metal particle pointless, point-like and smoothing them out, just to see that all these terms are generated. But these are really assumptionless equations. This is not quite effective theory, because this effective theory contains all these terms, this quadruple, that are function of the short-distance physics that we don't control. So here, the short-distance physics is included in this QIJ, but still it is present in the theory. So what we do to construct the effective theory, we do the same treatment as for dipole. We say that the dipole in the electrics, we say that the dipole is the expectation value of the dipole for a particle, the intrinsic dipole, plus its response to an electric field. So here we say that the quadrupole, the first term is the gravitational quadrupole, is its expectation value of a particle, its expectation value the presence of the short distance physics, fluctuations, plus some plus some response function due to the fact that if there is a long wavelength gravitational field, an extended particle will collapse, will deform more. So there is the quadrupole is distorted by a tidal force. Of course, being here in generativity, the first object that enters is the tidal tensor, which is two derivative of the metric, equivalence principle, with some kernel, which tells you that you care of the effect of the tidal forces at all times. And then, since not always the response will be like on average, there is some stochastic fluctuation that account for the mismatch between an average and the actual realization. So this means that we can replace, very similar to the electric material, we can replace this quadrupole with an expectation value, a tidal force, and so on and so forth, with these coefficients, which encode the effect of the energy physics. Now, this term doesn't contain any more short modes. It contains only long mode. So if you plug back that in the former equation, we get an equation just for long modes. The short distance phi has been integrated out. And the short distance phi enters only in the coefficients of a few higher dimension operators, which is nothing but the statement of decoupling. The short distance phi matters only for higher dimension operator. Now we obtain an expression just in terms of long wavelength fields. There is a peculiarity of this effective theory, because to have a local effective field theory, you need an hierarchy of scale. And in space, we are very OK. The universe is much larger than a cluster of galaxies, so we get an effective theory which is locally space. But in time, we are not OK. If you the time scale we're interested in a long-distance universe is Hubble scales. But if you ask how much a galaxy goes around another galaxy, it's about an Hubble time. So this means that this effective theory is locally space, but not local in time. This is not a disaster as it looks like, for technical reasons that I wrote small so that you cannot read them. It is because the propagator, the system is very relativistic, so non-locality in time doesn't map into non-locality in space. And at the end, it has very minor consequences for the actual computation. Also because this is a theory that you can see that we are in the universe. Time translation is not a symmetry at all, so all these coefficients are all time dependent. These are all time-dependent coefficients, because time translation is not a symmetry of the problem. OK, I brought down the quadrupole and so on and so forth. When do we strop? Very, very much like happens for the dielectric, we could have added to the dipole the quadrupole and so on and so forth. Here you can check the former equations, and you can see that, for example, for the equation for the force, the Taylor expansion will break down when the gravitational force on the center of mass becomes comparable to the force due to the tidal distortion. And the same for the Poisson equation, when the source of gravity due to the center of mass so is of order the distortion, the gravitational distortion on the quadrupole. Now, by dimensional analysis, you can see that these two terms, no matter what, will become larger than this at shorter distances because they're two derivatives. So there is a scale, which I call k nonlinear. For one number bigger than k nonlinear, the perturbation theory breaks down and the theory becomes strongly coupled. But also tells you that for k much less than k nonlinear, the expansion is manifestly convergent, and one write down, as in all effective theory, as many terms as are required in an expansion in k over k nonlinear, where k nonlinear is the wave number over the 1 over 10 megaparsec. Now, there is a slight subtlety that I would like to mention. So far, I described the position. I took this theory of extended objects, and I elaborated with which position. This corresponds to describing the system in a sort of in a Lagrangian way, where we're following the trajectory of every particle. In the universe, the trajectory of every particle will be labeled by the initial position plus how much they travel due to the perturbation to the initial position. In the limit the universe is homogeneous, they don't travel. So one could conceive that this expansion, how much they travel is not that much, also because they're very non-relativistic. So in the formulation I just mentioned, we don't expand at all in this parameter. But in order to simplify the explanation, we can expand in this parameter, say that it's small. And this means describing the particle from a fixed location and asking, what are the overdensity, the passing over my head if I stay at a fixed location, OK? If I do this, this is useful, because if I do this, the equation of motion that I get for the system are nothing but the equation of motion for a fluid, which, however, is imperfect. Because the equation of motion for a fluid, the Navier-Stokes equation, are automatically written in Eulerian coordinate. That is, The energy density, for example, in one position x, evolves like this. This is the continuity equation, this is the Poisson equation, and this is the momentum equation for an imperfect fluid. And notice that the effect of the short-distance physics, the effect that these objects were extended, enters in this generation of an effective stress tensor, which wasn't there at three-level, is generated by integrating out the short-distance physics. As before, we substitute this tau j with its expectation value in terms of the long wavelength field. So there is a background value and a sort of pressure, induced pressure, and so forth. So a dark matter fluid, a universe full of dark matter particle, when the cluster, a long distance, there is a bit of pressure. Okay, let me just mention you a non-renormalization theorem. See, this is a quantum field theory conference, I think I have to say, a non-renormalization theorem. So one question could have, can the universe is very perturbed on short distances. Can short distance nonlinearities change completely in the overall expansion rate of the universe, possibly leading to an acceleration of the universe without any cosmological cost? I don't know if some of you remember, but this was claimed in the astrophysics community. Of course, it's tough bet. I mean, not expected, but here we see it very well. Because when you look at the stress tensor that is generated by the short-distance physics, here, even before integrating out the short-distance physics, just within terms of what the short-distance physics is, you can see that the energy density at long distance is the energy density at short distance plus their kinetic, I should have put one here, one plus the kinetic energy plus the potential energy. Very intuitive, right? It should be like that. The pressure is proportional to the energy density times twice the kinetic energy plus the potential energy. Now, if you remember high school, when objects virialize, this is the quantity that vanishes for virialized objects. So when objects virialize, the induced pressure vanishes. So this is this I think is very nice, is the reason why people were in cosmology was claiming bigger back reaction effect, because this is the fact that you cannot see in perturbation theory. Virialization is a non-perturbative effect. So they were seeing big contribution in the ultraviolet. In the short-distance universe, this is 10 to the 20, and this is 10 to minus 5, so they were seeing huge contribution. But there is this non-perturbative thing. But notice that this means that when modes virialize, don't contribute anymore to the stress energy tensor. This is more than the coupling, because it's not that the ultraviolet modes just enter in a coefficient. They just don't contribute at all. This is the non-normalization theorem. It's like in SUSY. The loop above the SUSY breaking scale just cancel. So virialization is like SUSY, okay, so maybe we can do maybe the standard model is fixed by this. We should make a model. So the back reaction, therefore, is dominated by modes that become as nonlinear as possible, but not yet virialized. And this means that if you don't have dark energy, the induced W is 10 to minus 5. So this puts an end to this perturbation theory. But to this back reaction stuff, but we really want to do, I think the most important thing is to really do perturbation theory with this effective field theory. And let me explain just briefly how to do it. So there are these Poisson equations, these fluid equations that we want to solve iteratively in delta over rho. Now, our initial power spectrum is not a very simple function. You see, as wiggles, all this stuff. So it's a bit complicated, but just to give an intuition, one can just approximate each interval as a simple power law. So then what one does is that one just, as I said, one just takes this equation, performs loops, higher order calculation. For example, this is the two-loop result with some cutoff. And you can see that, for example, a two-loop, you get something proportional to the initial power spectrum times some k over k nonlinear times some divergent part. So this is in principle infinite. Some leading divergences, logarithms, and so, finite terms, and so on, so forth. Yes? No, because we're really starting from the perturbation. The leading order, the leading, we're expanding around the linear solution, which is a perturbed fluid with that power spectrum, the two-point function, which is the one. Here I'm taking, for example, an initial two-point function, which is this. This is a perturbed universe, but linear. No. Why you say so? No. Yes, but in a very mild nonlinear regime here. So these things are chaotic. All this stuff happens in ultraviolet. But you're talking about the ultraviolet, right? Yes, I'm not sure I understand the problem, sorry. I'm not sure I understand, really. Oh, sorry, here I can put the viscosity term, and there are all these terms, they're all there. It's a comparable, this is a very strange fluid, it's comparable to the pressure. So here I only have half an hour, so it's comparable. It's not in the, because in the tabular regime the viscosity is, yes, no, this is not, no, no. But notice that also these corrections are 10 to minus 5, so these are tiny, tiny effects. This is almost dust, but almost, and this is very crucial for the precision predictions, but this is a small correction on top of the, on a pressure of the dust fluid. It matters. Okay, thanks. Okay, so there are all these divergences. Now, these divergences, if you compute, they're zero because there is no counter temp to absorb them. So if you do the calculation, they're not just there. But you see that there is one here, which has exactly the shape of the counter term. That is, if you compute the counter term, you find that this has exactly the shape. So you renormalize the result. You cancel this divergence with the counter term. And you find that the result is some term that's called like K Kinonina plus something finite of K Kinonina cubed. That is higher order than the former one. So this tells you that the loop expansion after renormalization is converged. That is, every loop corresponds to smaller and smaller term. Now, this is quite unusual in astrophysics, so I would like to mention a few peculiarities. That this term, of course, is uncalculable in effective theory, but the power law is predicted. Well, this term here doesn't have any counter term in the equation of motion. We correspond to a local term in the equation of motion we cannot put. So this term here is calculable. For example, if the universe was a scaling universe, this should have been 0.44, so better be 0.44 or this theory is wrong. So this is analogous to the logs in relativistic theory, but being a very non-relativistic theory, the calculable terms in the low energy theory are much more. Pretty nice peculiarity. So after renormalization, the perturbative expansion, you see that every terms, any loop after renormalization becomes more and more convergent. How many do we with time? Okay. So if I didn't ask, it was, I see. Okay. So let me skip how to do. So let me just explain the example I will show. So for example, we do the calculation in one loop, and there is this uncalculable term, the speed of sound, but includes also the viscosity. Okay, all these terms, but it's only a one loop, they're all degenerate, so they act in the same way. And we fix it by imposing the theory that normalizes some energy scale. So this number should be of order 1, and the fit is 3, which is good. Now, then we do the two loop, and we need to renormalize again this term, but in a known way. It's like when you do the two loop calculation in the electrodynamics, you have to renormalize the electric charge. And this is some known number function of the theory. And it turns out that up to two loop, no additional counter term is needed. Non-additional uncalculable counter term is needed, only the one that are proportional to CS. Well, for example, we want to insert this in the one loop calculation. Okay, so the last thing I want to mention before showing the result is the following. As this theory is typical in any field theory, there are IR effects that needs to be taken into account. Let me explain, because the setup is very simple. If I do an Eulerian treatment, suppose I have a very short, sometimes T0, I have a very small short distance wavelength, and I try to describe how much is delta rho over rho at this point here, at x0. Now, suppose I had a big long wavelength mode on top of my short distance mode. This long wavelength mode will do something to this, and this is a nonlinear effect, so this is a perturbation effect. But a leading order in derivatives, if the mode is very long, the long derivative only is the leading term. The most thing that matters is the force, which is the gradient of phi. Now, by general relativity, gradient of phi is nothing physically. Only second derivative matter. This is just gradient of phi. The only thing that it does is translate the system, but doesn't change the dynamics inside. So in particular, this just it's a gauge transformation. You can remove it with a gauge. So after time, this grad will simply move the wave translated, for example, here. But if you ask about delta rho over rho at this point, here was 1, here is 0. The perturbation for nonlinearity is over the 100%. This is a huge non-perturbative effect. It's a breaking perturbation theory. Of course, this is stupid. It's a trivial thing, because it can be easily incorporated by remember that this is just a gauge artifact. So one can go to the frame where this is 0, do the calculation, and go back. Expanding the formula, we did it. And this corresponds to an IR resummation of the facts. And now I'll show you the results in the remaining 4 minutes. So this is the results of the effective field theory. As I mentioned, after the normalization, it's manifestly converged because all the counterterms have been provided, so it's just every loop counts less and less. This is the calculation one loop, this purple line, and this is the calculation at two loop. You can see that as you go from one loop to two loop, it agrees in grid. And also, this is the theoretical error. The three loop I didn't compute, but I can estimate. It should go like k over k nonlinear cube, so I can plot it and see when it should be fail. And you see that when this becomes of order 2%, the material should fail because there is that term that I don't compute, and indeed the theory fails. So this theory, not only every order converges, but also fails when it should. So higher order should increase the reach and then diverge more quickly, more quickly, more quickly, until we asymptotically reach the nonlinear scale. Now, these oscillations here that you can see in the dotted lines are the results if one wasn't doing the infrared resummation. And this happens because these infrared effects are very important because contrary to what happens in particle physics, the initial power spectrum here has big variation as a synotonal component in energy space. It's like if in your effective theory many thresholds were continuously crossed. And it does know that this bulk flow, therefore this effect due to the motion, mix for the local inertial frame what is k, because in a local inertia, when I said, oh, we can just do the boost, the local inertial frame has some finite size, and so there's a minimum resolution k space, and this exactly removes those effects. So this is the calculation we did without a IR summation, which was very hard, because also we're not very good in terms of calculation and things. And so this project was the main one, because it showed us that we could reach all these high level results. In fact, what really, for me, it's important is that not only, OK, this is not, maybe it's nice, effective field theory, it's nice to see it works, but it shows that the theory matches the two results up to the scale compared to former techniques were failing badly before. And this tells you that there is a chance to have perturbative treatment up to this energy scale of 0.6 inverse megaparsec, which, as I said, is 200 more than what below 4. This could change the future of what we think we can do. Notice that here I always plotted versus the normalized to p normalized nonlinear. You might wonder, oh, maybe you're fitting just one, and this is a trivial function. Notice that these functions are not so trivial. These are the various components of the calculation. You can see that the function, the power spectrum, changes by one order of magnitude in this range, and if each function is very different. I mean, here I'm plotting, the Fermi plot is 1%, okay? So these are huge corrections. In fact, let me compare with the former treatment. This is the former treatment. This is effective theory one loop, this is effective theory two loop. This is the one loop standard linear theory before. This was one loop before, and this is a two loop before. You could see that people increased loops, the improvement was absent. And still people compute the free loops, okay? So they keep going. So what was said is that there was no imperturbative improvement. Any loop should improve, and here it does exactly that. And also it's kind of nice that at two loop, we don't need any counter term. So this is the one loop, new counter term. So this is one loop calculation that fixes the only counter term we use. And then therefore the two loop results, which adds on top of the one loop all these other terms, is all predicted, and the various components are huge. This is the two loop that we had, is huge. So there is something another also huge that we had, and they all conspire to give the right result and until failing where they should fail, okay? So this is very nice, I think it's very nice. And this is very nice. I'm almost done. Let me just make another comment. Now, this is a fatty theory that is being agnostic on the short distance physics. And we are integrating out, and we have this parameter describing the physics. And I think I convinced you. I think it's pretty obvious that it does pretty well. But the short distance physics is not mysterious. We know what it is. It is a gravitational collapse of stars or galaxies or dark matter. Now, there is a way to compute this, but this system is very non-perturbative. There's people doing n-body simulation when they solve all the particles. So it's possible to do small n-body simulation that simulate just the nonlinear scale over the 20 megaparsec, and to measure these coefficients, these this coefficient in effective theory parameterize the low energy physics, just in terms of the quantities that have been simulated. This is very analogous to measuring f pi of the Carrier-Lagrangian from lattice QCD, which they did. So we did these things learning as model simulation. This is done mainly with Jay Carrasco, who is a string theorist. So me and string theorist was a tragedy. But he's a guy who is known for n equal 8, n equal 4 amplitudes. And so this is the measure. We take these boxes and we smoothed, and we computed what is analogous to this CSS. And we measure as a change with the smoothing scale, we measure this number here and this number here. And you see that as we change the smoothing, the number changes. But this is because in the low energy theory, the result should not depend on the cutoff. So the change between here and here should be as much as the loop in effective theory changes as you change lambda from lambda 1 to lambda 2. In fact, this brown curve is the theory prediction of the running. This is lattice running. This is the analogous of QCD lattice running. And you see that the running is just fantastic. It works very well. And if you asymptote to lambda infinity, you should get the same result that you get when you do the matching in the low energy theory. And also it agrees. So this, I think, is very good. It's analogous measuring f pi from lattice QCD simulation or from 2-2-2 scattering in low energy and getting the same number. And we got the same number, and we got also the running. So it seems okay. Of course, some of you might think this is all trivial. But let me just say that this is not very common in the astrophysics world. In fact, there was a famous particle physicist whose name is Rath and ends with D. He told me, I would say, oh, look, this works fantastic. And they said, but why you do this computation? The effective theory is obviously right, and of course it's going to agree with the data. Okay, so okay, fine. But then I went to not just famous, but very famous astrophysicist, and he told me, since loops are infinite, no perturbative treatment at large distance is possible, in dismissing me very quickly. So this is very, very new things, even though for many of you it's obvious, but it's not. And these are the clients. The ones upstairs are the clients of this theory. And another thing I want to say is that with this reach of 200 more modes, effect of 200 more quasi-linear modes, if you risk people, when they do the forecast for these experiments, they stop here. And then if they go here, people think they're crazy, so they stop really here. And we're saying that, look, you can predict all the way to here. And if you rescale all what we can learn about inflation, about high energy physics, this is very naive, but if everything works, we can get this FNL over the 1, which I would say is the theoretical threshold that we care. So, of course, this is just the beginning. We and very restricted number of friends are the only one who are doing these calculations. So can the community handle this? This is an opportunity for us. I mean, in the next 10 years, there's a chance of having a very bright future for primordial cosmology. Otherwise, if you want to know about inflation and about these things, it might be hard. Yes. Yes. No, it's exact. I mean, it turns out that the f pi, if you do all the pi's right, is the one that you get for phi dot, the speed of an inflaton. Yeah, exactly. Slorol. It's the Slorol inflation. That is, you can describe the theory very well from the Minkowski vacuum using Slorol inflation. Yeah, which I think, then, for example, the speed of sound is very close to, is order one. So it's all okay? Thanks. Okay, let me just conclude by summarizing that this effective theory is classical and applies to large structure, but containing many, if not most, of the features of quantum field theory. We saw loops, divergence, counter terms, renormalizations, non-renormalization theory, calculable, non-calculable terms, measurements in lattice and lattice running, matching the low energy theory, IR divergences. Also, all appears in the same way. Of course, this is just the beginning, and many calculations need to come. It's an analogous situation of having LHC already founded and happening in 7 years, and we didn't know how to do QCD perturbative. So we just learned how to do QCD perturbative, so there are many, many calculations to do, many verification with validation with n-body simulation. And also there is the connection more to observation, like how would we connect from dark matter to galaxies. This is called biasing, redshift distortion. And this is similar to what is QCD hadronization. So to me, this is very important, because what is at stake is not just this nice effective theory, if you think it's nice, but it's the 10-year future of fundamental physics from cosmology. And this is happening with a growing number of young collaborators. Okay, thanks.
Looks like you're comparing with the n-body simulation. So is the idea that you can do some things better than them eventually, or just an independent check?
You mean, of course, there will be always some higher order. I mean, we need the counter temps. So either we feed them to the data but the idea is that in this way, they could, for example, restrict to small n-body simulations that run very fast. As you change the factor, the cost goes like 10 cube, like the cube. So they could try to make them better, the simulation. For example, put baryons, do something better instead of simulating the linear universe.
Gotcha.
I answered the question?
Yeah.
Ah, okay, thanks.
Leonardo, can we go to the slide where you compare with perturbation theory, like the most dramatic? Yeah, this one.
Yes.
So, since you are using the input from the counter terms from n-body, I don't know where you're taking them. It's clear that you're going to do better than perturbation theory. But before doing the computation, was it really clear that you would do so much dramatically better? And it could be, because you always compare to KNL. But after all, this is a question of order one factors. It could have been that KNL is 0.2.
Yeah, it's another question. You learn what is KNL.
Yeah.
Can I answer? Or you want
yeah, how do you know that if you compute three loops, then in fact you will not improve with respect to two loop, but you will go back to one loop?
Yes,
before
it's true.
Doing the computation, you don't know.
Fine. This is you learn what is the strong capping scheme by doing the calculation,
yeah.
Because order one is unknown. This is true.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say. Even f pi. You could have asked the same for f pi. You could ask to Weinberg the same question in the 60s. It's true. There is order one coefficient. In fact, we know what is canon linear, but at each loop, we don't know exactly how much is the improvement. But the improvement scales down. That is, for example, from linear to one loop, we increase in k by factor of 3. Then 1.5 from 1 to 2, another factor. So the series seems to be converging, as it should.
I
mean, the improvement should slow down.
It's not clear that it should converge.
Should slow down. You could be very unlucky.
No, I mean.
Fine. I mean, okay.
No,
I know that.
I must say that you
course,
are presenting
that.
It. You are presenting it a bit as if it was foregone conclusion that you are going to be successful. But in fact, you got a bit lucky with such a dramatic improvement.
Well, the number that we're getting for the counter terms is all order one. That is, it's not that we're being lucky that some terms are small. The speed of sound.
But order one in which units? You just fix KNL to some value, and then that if you fix KNL a bit small, a bit larger,
KNL,
they would get. They
yeah,
would
you
be
can extract. I agree with you, there is an order one uncertainty.
No, the question is that in field theory, we have this 1 over 4 pi argument.
Yes.
Do you have some
similar
argument here?
Yeah, these are included,
here?
The pi's. Yeah, the pi's are included. In fact, after including the pi's, the KNL that we use, where the pi counting is more simple,
okay.
is 4.
So there's some NDA here.
Yes, of course. Okay, you want me to go even there?
I want to compare how much analysis.
But it's always true that order one factors, in particular, since here what matters is the cubic of how much you reach, order one matters a lot. But if you have some other idea, rather than measuring.
No, I don't.
No, in the sense that the order one, you have to, I don't see any other way than doing the calculation to get order one number.
No, but you just fixed KNL to some value, and it was not clear to me how you fixed it before doing the computation.
After all,
in QCD, we find KNL by doing the, by comparing with the experiment.
Yeah, but sorry, I put down this KNL, but what is really mattering is the CS over KNL. So I can choose, the KNL is found, by, for example, when seeing the linear power spectrum is becoming linear, non-linear. This is more or less, this is the scale. But of course, I'm not putting those numbers there. What we're putting is CS over k nonlinear. So the CS, in a sense, absorbs the uncertainty in k nonlinear. Okay? You see here, for example, is CS over k nonlinear here. So if you change by order one the k nonlinear, I can always absorb it in changing the CS. So after doing that, we find the CSs that we need are order one, which is what you think. Okay, after extracting the two pi's and so on. So it all seems to work. But notice that people had noticed that already in embodied simulations, people were seeing that the correlation, that they were seeing that the ultraviolet scale seemed to be a bit higher than what. However, as you said, I mean, many in the community think that the loops infinity are bad, so they didn't know really what was going on. But they were noticed that the correlation function with the linear theory, if I look at some quantity, look well, others look very bad. So there were already indications that the ultraviolet scale was much larger. And also, it's not that the galaxy is 100 megaparsec. It's 10 megaparsec.
One more question?
Not? Thanks.